This is Bruin Radio, a weekly student show from Brookings Harbor High School on the Wild Rivers Coast. By tuning into our show, you're getting the latest news, interviews, music, poetry, and more from the outstanding Bruins of Brookings Harbor High School. We are happy to broadcast on KCIWLP in Brookings, Oregon on 100.7 FM.
This is Bruin News with Jeremy Pettiner and
Dane Tipman. Folks, we've got some big meal news. The high school cafeteria is now also serving its breakfast items during the first break period of the day. This means that the items on the breakfast menu for that day that remain will be kept fresh and available for students to eat during the break, which typically begins after first and second period on a typical day, or right after the first period of the day on a block day. You won't have time to sit and eat, but come by and grab a little extra fuel if you need it. This late breakfast option is particularly important for any students who are rushing to get to school and didn't get the chance to eat breakfast.
The Empty Bowls fundraiser is coming up on the 30th of January. Stop by the BHH cafeteria starting at 6:30 p.m. for a delicious meal. Tickets are sold by National Honor Society students, and they'll be sold right at the door as well.
Sadie Hawkins Dance song requests are open. There's a song request box at the Coffee Cave. Song requests are open until the 9th of February. Speaking of the Coffee Cave, Bruin Radio is waiting for a request for public records to be responded to by the City of Brookings regarding the Chetco Coffee Roasters. We're continuing our investigation just to make sure that this company that we buy coffee from has the proper licensing as a business. On February 21st of this year, some students may be excluded from school. This means they will be prevented from attending the Brookings Harbor School District until certain terms are met. We're referring to the exclusion date for incomplete immunization records. According to the school district's main page at the time of this report, if the records on file for a student show that they are missing certain immunizations, the student will be excluded from school. According to District Nurse Patricia Trish Walker, a report was submitted to Curry Community Health on January the 17th, listing students who have an incomplete record. After repeated mailings and notices this fall, the Brookings Harbor School District had 108 students with incomplete immunization records at the start of January 2018. The health department will review the report and send out exclusion orders to parents and guardians. These orders will be mailed on February 7th, 2018. The immunization exclusion date for Brookings Harbor Schools is February 21st, 2018, which is the statewide exclusion date in Oregon. On and after that date, students with incomplete records will be excluded from school until the requirement is met and the school district has provided documentation showing that it has been met. Immunizations can be obtained at the school-based health center and at Curry Community Health.
Those who choose not to immunize their students must complete a two-step process. Parents or guardians must complete an online education course and provide the district nurse with a certificate that is obtained after completing the course. And they need to come to their child's school and sign the backside of the certificate of immunization status and complete the non-medical exemption portion. For questions, please contact District Nurse Trish Walker at 541-469-7417. That's 541-469-7417 or via email.
College scholarship application week begins this month on January 29th and ends on February 2nd. That will be the time to start applying for scholarships. Students applying for college, be ready to get your scholarship applications submitted. Students, the Vans Custom Culture Contest is coming up soon, and BHHS is preparing to compete. Listeners, we are very proud of the sculpture that last year's team put together. It was awesome. Visitors to the main entrance of our school were able to see the unique creation enshrined in transparent plastic for months on end. It's time to make a new one. If you'd like to get involved in this Vans Shoes-themed art contest, stop by the art room and talk to teacher Cheryl Tuttle soon.
And that's it for this week's Bruin News.
You're listening to Bruin Radio, episode 51, sharing content from the Carl King interview. Our student interviewer was Jeremy Pettiner, and I'm Dane Tipman. I'd like to thank Carl King for his graciousness and sincerity during the interview. I would also like to thank KCIW and the Brookings Harbor High School administration and staff.
Hello, this is Jeremy Painter on Bruin Radio, and I am here doing an interview with Carl King.
Well, thank you for inviting me. I look forward to this.
Mr. King, we have questions for you that were written and submitted by a variety of students. Some of these questions are bold, and we want you to know that you can decline to answer any question at any time. We also want you to know that some of the questions that students submitted were changed to have a more journalistic presentation and may not be the question the student submitted verbatim.
That's fine with me.
Carl, we understand from quotes in the Curry Coastal Pilot that you're a resident of Nasika? Is that how you say that? Nasika Beach in Oregon. Is that correct?
Yes, that is. I've been a resident there for 5.5 years now.
Could you tell us a little bit about the Nasika Beach community?
Nasika Beach is a small village, really. It's not incorporated. It's part of the unincorporated county. With the exception of a store and an RV park, it's entirely residential. It does have beachfront housing. It has non-beachfront housing. It has a very diverse economic population.
When you say unincorporated, what do you mean by that?
Well, in Oregon, you're either a county, you're in a county, and some areas of the county have incorporated in the past as cities. Anything that's not in an incorporated city is in an unincorporated area, and it is totally governed by county government.
Okay.
In the city, you have city government performing those functions. Where I came from, counties had virtually no role. And towns touch towns and cities, and so you had 50-some government agencies throughout the state running local government.
Okay.
Here in Curry County, you have 3 cities in the county.
Okay. In late 2013, a Denise and Carl King donated $308 to the Brookings Harbor High School robotics team, 4110. Was this your donation?
Yes, it was.
Maybe we ask what inspired you to donate to the robotics team.
Well, I am an alumnus of MIT. I have a interest, although I'm not a scientist or an engineer, I changed and became a lawyer instead. I have maintained my interest with the school and a great interest in helping high school kids and younger kids be exposed to science, technology, engineering, and math, because I believe that's where the jobs of the future are. And I learned of the robotics team, and I thought it was just a great thing to support. I've loved robotics stuff.
Mm-hmm. We read a letter to the editor in a recent issue of the Curry Coastal Pilot that supported the upcoming Measure 101. The letter was submitted by a Carl King. Was this your letter?
Yes, it was.
Could you summarize your letter for us?
Well, the letter was an attempt to put forth what I believe are the basic facts concerning Measure 101 as it applies to Curry County. The fees that are being assessed to certain hospitals and insurance companies and corporations are not assessed against our hospital, Curry General, and they pay to keep Medicaid payment insurance available for a large number of our residents. Now, our hospital gets a better reimbursement than other hospitals for Medicaid. The hospital financial well-being is impacted by having our residents insured with Medicaid because they need care. And if Medicaid doesn't pay the bill, they'll come into the emergency room, they'll be treated, they'll get a bill, and they won't be able to pay it. To me, it was a no-brainer that whether you're a liberal or a conservative or Republican or Democrat or whatever you call yourself, if you care for the residents of Curry County, you should vote yes on Measure 101. And by the way, the turnout in Curry County is very high. It's one of the highest in the state. So there's a lot of interest here on that thing, and people have until Tuesday to get their ballots back.
Okay. Do you agree that Measure 101 will lead to increased health care costs for Oregonians?
I think it will reduce health care costs. It will generate a huge amount of federal funds to match the monies that will be paid in through this Measure 101. And as I said before, it will probably have a reduction in the amount of unpaid services rendered by Curry General, which means its rates to those who do pay can be lowered. Because right now, whether we know it or not, everyone that pays a hospital bill is paying for services for someone who hasn't paid.
Okay. Do you think that Measure 101 will lead to increased health care costs for Oregonians?
No.
Could you tell us what leads you to believe that the healthcare industry won't pass on these costs to Oregonians through increases in charges?
My understanding is the legislature limits the passed on to the 1.5% for the average family. If that happens, it works out to something less than $100 a year. It's a very modest amount. And again, we're going to pay to provide health care to the people on Medicaid who will lose that coverage regardless. So it's better to have them insured and getting preventive care than going into the emergency room when they're sick.
Why do you feel that federal aid to Oregonians should be increased?
Depends on the purpose of the federal aid as to whether I think it ought to be increased.
Mm. What are some circumstances for that that would cause this to be true for you?
I think federal aid for education would be a great benefit to the students in Oregon. Today, Oregon has become the Mississippi of the country in that it is has one of the lowest rated education systems in the United States. It's ranked either 48th, 49th, or 50th in the quality of education we are providing K through 12. We have to recognize that there are counties like Curry County where the citizens cannot necessarily afford, given the number of retired people, veterans, people on disability we have, we can't necessarily afford the taxes that would provide that quality education. And so we need help. And that's why we have a federal government. It's to help.
Okay. What do you say to those who claim that the Affordable Care Act actually raises premiums as well as overall health insurance costs?
Well, I'm not sure that's been proven. It takes me back to when I was in high school. I had a favorite math teacher for 3 years, and he would always say, and it stayed with me for 60 years, figures don't lie, but liars do figure. You give me a set of numbers, and I can make it prove one is equal to two. That doesn't mean that one is equal to two. I don't think Affordable Care Act it's raised some people's premiums, it's raised some expenses, it's being sabotaged. I don't think it necessarily, if fully implemented, will raise costs.
I'd like to remind listeners that these questions did not specifically come from me. They came from the students from our school. Do you believe that low-income individuals should help themselves rather than living on government assistance?
I think there's a myth that people on public assistance are people who have the ability to work and choose not to. And while there may be some of those people who do receive assistance, the vast majority of people receiving assistance are people who are disabled, elderly, and children. Years ago, there was a favorite expression by those who expressed that viewpoint, where they would talk about the welfare mothers in their Cadillacs driving up to pick up their food stamps. I've listened to county commissioners here in Curry County complain because someone checked out of the grocery store in front of them with a steak and used the SNAP benefit to pay for that steak. Now, I have a friend who lives down here in Brookings who is disabled. She's wheelchair bound. She barely can afford rent and food on the assistance she gets. And yes, on a special occasion, she may choose to buy herself a steak. And I can't find anything wrong with that, because I choose on occasion to buy myself a steak.
According to the Curry County budget for the 17-18 fiscal year, you are listed as a budget committee member. Could you tell us a little about what you do as a budget committee member?
Well, that year was my second of 3 years of my term as a citizen member of the budget committee. In Oregon, a county or a special district has budget committees that are comprised of their commissioners and an equal number of citizens. So the Curry County Budget Committee is six individuals. On a Monday in May, let's talk about this year, on I believe May 7th, I will be handed a document that's about 140 pages. Mm-hmm. It will have a budget that has salary and equipment material line items for every department in the county government, and we will have then department heads appear and defend their request, be questioned, starting the following week, and after 3 or 4 days of that, the six of us will come to decision as to what to recommend to the three county commissioners, and they will then act on that recommendation typically in June. It's a very involved process. It's a very good process. It's open. It's televised. I have attended county budget hearings for at least 3 years prior to being appointed to the committee. And I will tell you, for most of those 3 years, I was the only non-committee member or non-county employee sitting in that room watching the county budget be created. Hmm. Hopefully that will change.
We read a piece in the Curry Pilot titled, "A Taxpayer Looks at the Curry County Budget Process." Could you summarize your main point from that piece for our listeners?
Yes, refreshing my memory on it, the concerns I had in 2016, we addressed in 2017 and in 2016. When we looked at the budget in May of 2016, we found that scattered throughout every department budget, there was a category of expense called other, with a number. And with the exception of the Board of Commissioners budget, there was no purpose that in mind for that. It was, if you will, a slush fund. There, in case somebody wanted to spend money that they on something they hadn't talked to us about. And on top of that, there was then in various places $100,000 or more additional contingency funds. And based on my experience with budgeting on a finance committee back east, where we ran an $88 million budget with only $144 of slush fund. I just thought it was excessive that it led to pulling more money out of the road fund that was necessary. It reduced funding for the sheriff's department. And one of my goals that year was to eliminate that. And we made great progress. I think by the end of the budget, there was still some of that that I thought didn't need to be in there, but a significant amount of that was reduced. And so that the budget truly reflects what the county needs as opposed to making people feel comfortable.
In the context of a county budget, what are reserve funds and what is their purpose?
We had a system that started in about 1630 of open meetings to do everything government did in our municipality, where every voter, every registered voter could attend an open meeting. It was in March and then it was moved to May, and vote on every line item in the budget. Included in that budget would be a number for a reserve fund. The reserve fund was money under the control of a finance committee and the town board, governing board, in case someone needed money that wasn't in the budget. And so we would start, back when I was on the finance committee, we had $100,000 in our reserve fund, and maybe during the next 12 months, we'd spend half of it. And as I said in my letter, in 2015-2016, the town of Marblehead, with its $88 million budget, had a reserve fund of $144,000, and as of May of that year, had only spent $124,000. Now, the county budget is nowhere near $88 million, because that $88 million included schools and sewer and water and all school town expenditures. And it didn't seem to me why we needed that much reserves, if you will, as contingencies or others here in the county.
Around the 4th of April, 2017, the pilot reported at least two meetings between County Commissioner Tom Huxley and some members of the Citizens Budget Advisory Committee and the Budget Committee. Were you present at these meetings?
I think so.
To the best of your recollection, what was the purpose of these meetings?
You are testing my... They certainly concerned the budget. It was at that time there was a Citizens Budget Advisory Committee established at the request of law enforcement. I had attended as a citizen most of those meetings because I knew they'd make a recommendation to the Budget Committee and that I'd have to give credit. I'd either have to validate that information or question it, and I wanted to have a basis for knowing how much credibility I should give to it. And I believe we talked about that. There were only two of us there of a six-member committee who did not violate any open meeting laws. We met in a county room in the basement of the annex building. And it was simply to have a better sense of where we were going in the budget process that year. I don't remember the details of what we discussed, but it was certainly dealt with the budget. I believe Mr. Huxley described it at a recorded commissioner's meeting at a later time, and that's probably a better place to find out what we talked about than my memory. I am getting old.
Bruin Radio attempted to find the recordings of the meetings mentioned in this interview. According to the pilot article published by reporter Jane Stebbins on the 7th of April, 2017, Tom Huxley was part of meetings held on Monday and Tuesday, which would have been the 3rd and 4th of that week. The Curry County website lists agendas, packets, and videos for Curry County Board of Commissioners meetings. In early April of 2017, only the 5th of April has recorded content for a meeting, which is a general meeting of all the commissioners. Additionally, Jane Stebbins' article quotes Tom Huxley as saying he met on that Monday with Carl King and one other member of the Budget Committee and two members of the Citizens Budget Advisory Committee. The article states that Huxley met on Tuesday with Carl King, the same one other Budget Committee member, and then two members of county staff.
How were you invited to the meetings?
I may have invited Mr. Huxley to the meeting. I don't recall who extended the invitation to whom. And I believe maybe the third party at some of these meetings was Mr. Breyer, Terry Breyer, who is a neighbor of mine, who has been attending county commissioner meetings for some time, who also was attending the Citizens Advisory Committee meetings. Mm-hmm. And he, in fact, I think may have been on it. I don't remember. I think he may have been one of the people appointed to that. But it was simply, again, a open discussion of county finances and the budget.
What were your thoughts on Court Boyce's reaction to the meetings?
Well, I thought they were unfortunate. Based upon a lack of understanding of public meeting laws, and part of a continuing effort by people in a certain group of people and public officials to discredit Mr. Huxley.
Tell us more about that.
Well, I'm somewhere you'll find, if you maybe you have, back when Mr. Huxley was running for county commissioner the first time 4 years ago, I believe I wrote a letter to both newspapers to explain why I, a progressive Democrat, would be supporting Tom Huxley, a very conservative person. And I believe I talked about transparency in government and cost control in government, internal controls on government expenditures, and I thought at the time Mr. Huxley was the best person that we could elect. And I today continue to believe that, but it has been obvious that there are certain people who have disagreed with that, and they have, including people who are reporters for several newspapers, who have gone out of their way to try to discredit his efforts to serve the taxpayers.
Carl, we're familiar with your involvement in Measure 876, which would have created something called a home rule charter. Could you tell our listeners what Measure 876 was?
Yes. Prior to my arrival in Curry County, there had been a citizens committee established by the Board of Commissioners, maybe 20 members, who made a series of recommendations to the Board of Commissioners. The first recommendation was that the county should move as rapidly as possible to change from a Board of Commissioner-run county to a county having a county administrator. After that election, the Board of Commissioners refused to do anything. They refused to continue that committee in existence. They refused to entertain any thought of having a county administrator. And so a group of citizens, myself included, members of that original committee got together. We met at my house. We met in public places. And we decided that we ought to attempt to put that in effect through a means of creating a charter government where the charter would mandate that there, you know, and the charter had three main things to accomplish the goal. One was to have five commissioners so that two of them could talk to each other, because with only three, they can't talk to each other without violating public meeting law. Second, to have an administrator run the county. And third, which was, I think, a mistake, was we wanted to move the assessor, clerk, treasurer, and at the time the surveyor was still being elected, I think, from being elected to being appointed, primarily because those are administrative jobs. And we thought that an administrator could work best if they were appointed and not elected. The charter initiative was defeated, primarily by the two commissioners who refused to consider it. They set up their own charter committee and refused to put on it anyone who had supported ours, so that they would get a obvious report from their committee that we ought not to have a county administrator.
David Brock Smith was an opponent of the measure and is quoted by Oregon Live as having called the measure disastrous for our citizens. What did you think of Mr. Smith's comments at the time?
I fully expected there would be resistance from what one could call the old boy network, the status quo. Any change is resisted. The resistance was that, primarily the main resistance was they claimed we were taking away people's right to vote. And frankly, the decision to put that as the third prong of the charter was a hotly discussed compromise position. Some of us would not have put that in there, but it was put in. I think Mr. Brock Smith and Mr. Itzen, the other commissioner, were protecting themselves and their friends and not wishing to have a professional administrator perform administrative duties. It was unfortunate, but, that's politics.
Have you been keeping up with David Brock Smith's activities as our District 1 representative?
I read his postings on Facebook from time to time. I read the articles in the newspapers. I've read some of the bills he's promoted. I was certainly aware of how he came to be our representative in the House of Representatives in Oregon.
Have you heard of anyone who will be registering to run against David Brock Smith in this year's elections?
Yes, I have. I understand that there will be, although the person has not yet registered, to my knowledge, a person who is talking about running from the Curry County part of the district. And I'm not sure whether there'll be any, as a Democrat, I'm not sure whether there'll be any candidates from the other counties. I think a lot will depend on what State Senator Cruz does between now and the deadline for filing.
You brought up a someone. Would you allow us to know who this person is?
I've heard the name. I've not met the person. So I really can't answer specifically that question. I understand it's a young man who has a strong interest in being in the state legislature to help.
How did you feel about the Curry Pilot's coverage of the measure and the debates about the measure?
I don't have a residual reaction or to it. I think we had an opportunity to place advertisements that was fair and equal. I think the letters that they published were not, you know, skewed one way or the other. I don't remember what their editorial position was. But at the time, I didn't feel I was being our position was being misrepresented. I think there were public officials who put out statements that misrepresented what the charter would do that were reprehensible. But I don't think the pilot initiated any of that.
What would it take for the county to attempt something like the Home Rule Charter again?
Well, the county commissioners could put it on the ballot without signatures. A group of citizens could do what we did and get the required number of signatures and put it on the ballot. It doesn't have to be, you know, a home rule charter county to have a county administrator. Mm-hmm. Most general law counties, which Curry is, have administrators. This board of commissioners have voted to have a county administrator. They've appointed an interim county administrator who I believe is performing very well. And I read in the paper that there is some thought that he may be asked to stay on as the permanent county administrator, which I think would be good. The Home Rule Charter adds the protection that after the next election, that doesn't change. Every 2 years, we elect at least one out of the three, and the other for 4 years, and then 2 years later, we elect two. So, you know, the composition of the board changes frequently. I don't think anyone's been reelected for some time now who served. And so, you know, it's not a job with a great deal of seniority protection. But I think Mr. Hitt, who holds that interim position, does very well. So, and I now understand that under Oregon law, they've been advised by the new county attorney, the administrator does have some say as to how the elected officials run their offices. So there's really not as much urgency in having them appointed versus being elected. So, I don't think we need a home rule charter. We've gotten to where I wanted to see us get without it.
How happy are you with the current Curry County commissioners?
It's early in the terms of Commissioner Gold and Commissioner Boyce. From my earlier answers, you know, I am happy and pleased with what Commissioner Huxley has been doing. He and I do not necessarily agree on everything. We certainly don't agree on the policy issues at the federal or state level, but county government doesn't deal with those. Commissioner Gold, I believe, opposed the Home Rule Charter when we proposed it. I appreciate where she stands on the issues. I think she, as chairman, she's running a very good meeting. I think the board is functioning. It's going to function on a 2-to-1 basis for another 2 years or until the end of 2018. And then we'll see who gets elected.
Recently, the Curry County Commissioners decided to amend a proposal to condemn the Forest Service's conduct during the Checo Bar fire and instead issue a statement saying they want to work to resolve the policies of the Forest Service mutually. What was your reaction to hearing the commissioners' initial condemning proposal?
Well, first, the three commissioners did not vote to condemn the fire service. One commissioner, Commissioner Boyce, advocated doing that. I volunteer with the county sheriff's search and rescue. I was called out on 4 occasions in 3 days, one day twice, to assist with whatever needed to be done with respect to that fire and with evacuations. I was in the command post here in Brookings for the weekend and then the day of the eclipse, which I believe was a Monday. Mr. Boyce was there. I don't think he contributed any more to what was going on with fighting that fire than I did, and maybe less, because on the day of the eclipse, I got in a vehicle with another search and rescue person, Jesse Fletcher, and we went up and down Carpenterville Road and other roads warning people that there was a mandatory evacuation order and they needed to get out because the fire had changed. There are those who will sit in public meetings or private meetings and stand there and say that the Forest Service representatives are lying to us, that they can't be trusted, they can ask that every one of them be fired. And I practiced law for 40 years. And the way to reach an accord and to get something better from someone else is not to insult them, not to stick your finger in their eye, but it's to sit down, and as Lyndon Johnson used to say, let's reason together. And I think the revised resolution that they will vote on takes that approach. I've sat in meetings where people who have knowledge of firefighting, whose daughter is one of our firefighters for the fire service, when Mr. Boyce was describing everything he thought was wrong, and that mother sat there shaking her head saying, no, that's not true. I trust her more than I trust Mr. Boyce when it comes to firefighting. And I think the commissioners are saying, as Senator Merkley did here on Martin Luther King Jr. Day, let's get the experts, let's get the information, let's get the facts, and then let's take a look and see what we can do to alleviate the situation.
Do you agree with the commissioners amending their proposal?
Oh, absolutely. I think, frankly, they're adopting much of what Tim Palmer proposed to them. And again, it's the, we have questions, we have concerns. It wasn't very well. You know, the outcome was bad. How can we work together to avoid this happening again? This past week, on Tuesday, I participated in a road search for a missing person for search and rescue. We went up Elk River Road through the Forest Service, BLM land. At one point, I had no idea where we were, but our GPS said we were south of Humbug Mountain to the east. And let me tell you, those roads are not being maintained perfectly. I attended the meeting on Forest Service before the fire down here in Brookings, where they were talking about that they were showing what roads they were going to keep open for public access for hunting, fishing, mushroom hunting. And, you know, and everyone was complaining because they were saying the environmentalists are making you close those roads. And I asked the person who made the presentation later, I said, set aside that. Do you have money in your budget to keep open any other roads than the ones you're proposing? And she said, no. The environmental concern had no impact on what roads are, you know, being kept open. It was budget. It's the budget coming out of Washington. And Washington budget has been controlled by the Republican Party for some time now. And, you know, that's the fact.
Carl, in this interview, you have the opportunity to reach out to all of the Bruin Radio listeners. If you were to encourage one person to consider running for Curry County Commissioner in May of this year, who would you choose?
I would encourage Mr. Huxley to run for re-election. I think he's been there for 4 years. He knows where the bodies are hidden. He knows where things need to change. He has shown that he is relentless in getting done what needs to be done. And he's done it in the face of tremendous opposition and at times sabotage from county employees and other elected officials. Last week, the pilot reported that the former IT director's lawsuit against the county had been quote-unquote settled, stated that neither the IT director or his attorney would comment, obviously gave no indication she had sought any comment from the county, did a long recounting of his $9.3 million claim, ending her article with talking about how John Ward and all the department heads had supported the IT director in his claims against Commissioners Huxley, Brown, a private citizen in the county. That lawsuit was technically settled because the plaintiff dropped it. Faced with a hearing before a judge that could have resulted in it being dismissed summarily, he chose to have it dismissed so long as the county did not seek to recover legal fees against him. And so the settlement was for $0. Now, someone had a letter in a subsequent pilot suggesting, wondering why we hadn't, no one had been told how much the payment was. Well, the payment was zero. And I don't think any of those county department heads and elected officials who berated Brown and Huxley and defended the IT director stepped forward and filed any written statement under oath supporting or, you know, stating the facts on which they maintain their support for him. I'm not involved and I don't know that for a fact, but that's my understanding. So, you know, yes, the county paid nothing.
Carl, how do you know about the terms of the settlement?
Well, it wasn't under any confidentiality agreement. There was no understanding that it could not be talked about. The agreement specifically, there was no agreement not to disparage each other, as typically you would have in a settlement. And I knew the status of the case. I've been following it. I am a friend of Susan Brown, the former commissioner. And I knew that there was a hearing, and when I asked how the hearing went, I was told that the case settled, and at least one county official who would know confirmed that to me. And I'm not going to name names on that, but I certainly knew of it and thought, and I understand the county's not planning on putting out a press release or anything, but I think the people of Curry County need to know that the IT director walked away from that lawsuit taking nothing.
We understand you're a part of the Gold Beach Rotary Club. Could you tell us a little bit about your position?
Well, I'm a member of the club and the president of a related entity, the Gold Beach Rotary Foundation, which is a nonprofit charitable organization. My primary reason and activity as a Rotarian locally has been promoting STEM, science, technology, engineering, and math education opportunities in the public schools of Curry County. Last year, the club got a matching grant from our Rotary District and used it to purchase Lego robotic kits so that to supplement what I had found other funding for the year before for those kits. And so the Curry County Libraries now own 10 robotic kits to build and program and compete robots last summer, one of the Riley Creek school teachers taught a multi-day course here in Brookings, in Gold Beach, and in Port Orford, 20 kids about in each town. I think it was a 2 or 3 day program, and they built robots, and they programmed them and did things with them. That was the interest I had when I personally supported the robotics program down here in Brookings. I think if you look back the year before, there was a grant from the 484 Phi Alpha Foundation, which I produced because I'm president of that foundation, which is a group of MIT alumni that promote STEM education in public schools. So I'm very much, that and Curry County Voices, the hopes of having a public access TV station are places I'm concentrating my efforts as a Rotarian. I'm, as a Rotarian, Rotary is an international organization. It has chapters in over 100 countries, and I can't remember how many members, but it has a foundation that's now in its 101st year that is the top-ranked charitable foundation in this country, 5 stars, and it has $1 billion of assets now, and I can't remember how many hundreds of thousands of dollars of grants are granted to do good deeds around the world, one of which is with the Gates, Bill Gates and his Melinda Gates Foundation, we are pledged to wipe out polio. We're close. We're down to 3 countries. But the Rotary Club, all three, yeah, there's one in Brookings, there's one in Port Orford. All three clubs do things in the community to support education, athletics. I just wrote a check this morning for the Gold Beach Rotary basketball program that is operated by one of our juvenile officers from the Sheriff's Department, who's a club member, for example.
This has been Jeremy Pettiner interviewing Carl King. Carl, thank you so much for being here.
It was my pleasure. I enjoyed talking with you.
You're listening to Bruin Radio, episode 51, sharing content from our Women's March work on the 21st of January, 2018. Our student interviewers were Jeremy Pettiner and Iris Mitchell, and I am Dane Tittman. I'd like to thank KCIW, the organizers, attendees, and counter-protesters of the Brookings Harbor Women's March, and my student journalists who volunteered their weekend to report on this event.
Hi there. My name is Rose Mantle. I live here in Brookings, Oregon, and I'm participating in the Women's March today because I believe it's my duty as a citizen of the United States of America to protest a government that I find to be unjust, and because of all the women who've marched before me to assure that I have this right to march. Thank you.
That's beautiful. Thank you, Rose.
You're welcome.
So, Izam, my name's Iris, and I'm here to interview. What does your sign say?
My sign says healthcare is a human right.
And what does that mean to you?
It doesn't mean everybody needs have to have a healthcare. It shouldn't be conditioned by the ability to pay for it. So you're asking for healthcare for all.
Yes, I do. We got it.
That was magnificent. So is this what you're marching for today?
You know, this is the sign I'm carrying, but in my heart, I'm marching for justice. I'm marching for equality, and I'm marching for peace, not only in the United States, but everywhere, all around the world.
Beautiful. Thank you so much.
What is your name?
My name is Shannon.
What brings you to the march today?
Well, I'm relatively new to the community, and I've been looking for some camaraderie and like-minded unity, and so here I am.
Did you bring a sign with you today?
I did.
What does your sign say?
It's Susan B. Anthony's quote, "Liberty, humanity, justice, and equality."
What does that mean to you?
Well, do you have an hour? No, I feel like these are our basic rights as Americans, and our current government is not upholding these for every person in our country. And it's a tragedy. We need to have reminders of this every day.
Thank you.
All right. So, if I could get your name.
I'm LaRose Felicity.
And I'm Iris, here interviewing her. What does your sign say today?
My sign says...
Hold on.
I march so LGBT families don't become illegal again.
That's wonderful. What does that mean to you?
Well, I came out as a lesbian in 1978 in Kentucky, and we basically had none of the civil rights accorded to other people in our society. We could be fired from our job, kicked out of our apartment, kicked out of a restaurant if we held hands with our partner, had no right to be married, no right, and most importantly, no right to our children. We were presumed to be unlawful or, incompetent parents, unfit parents. So, my wife and I, we lived there from when we got together in 1988 until 1996, and then we moved to San Francisco, in part because we were very afraid for our children, because, anybody who had a number two pencil could go over to the juvenile court and say, well, these children are being kept by unfit parents, and work to take our children away. And both of our children are adopted, and they had no place else to go. And so that was a pretty terrifying thing.
That's wonderful. Is that what you marched for today?
Yeah, and it took a long time. My wife and I, we've been married 5 times. The last one, let me see now. It was our 20th anniversary, so it must have been 2008 before we were actually lawfully married. We were married once before, but they set it aside.
Oh.
Yeah.
So it's, well, I'm sorry.
And, some of the things about this are really difficult. And in Florida, there was a family, 2 women and 2 kids, who went on a Rosie O'Donnell tour, and they were having a great time. One of the moms had a stroke, and because she was in Florida, the hospital would not let her wife see her or her children see her, and she died. And we didn't have the right to make medical decisions for our family or even visit our family. We had no right to inherit from our partner. So these are very significant things. There's 1,062 rights that don't accord to gay and lesbian families, that accord to other families.
Thank you for marching for that today.
You're very welcome.
So this is Iris with...
Tom Gibbon.
What does your sign say today?
A divided States of America is not great.
What does that mean to you?
To me, the campaign for Trump was, let's make America great again. And a year ago, my heart was broken when he was inaugurated. And here it is a year later, and my heart is still broken. And instead of being great, it's being divided every day. And because that's why I'm here to march, because so many things that I have spent my whole life committed to are falling, as we see, gay rights, women's rights, transgender rights, you name it, it's falling by the wayside. And I feel like I'm back in the 1950s. I was a Vietnam anti-war activist. I've been a gay rights activist for a year. Women's rights activist, and now I'm back on the streets at 67, having to fight again for the basic rights of all people.
Is that what you're marching for today?
Yes. And I'll continue to march. I'm in a vigil every week that's protesting what this administration is doing. So it's not just the march today, it's living it every day and trying to influence people to change what's going on. It's insanity. We have to change. And here comes Buffalo Springfield singing in the background, which is perfect.
Oh, yeah.
From 1967. That's when I was in the streets before.
That's a wonderful. The perfect anthem for this.
It is.
All right. Thank you for sharing that with us. Yes.
I am here watching a lady make a sign for the Women's March with Cher playing in the background.
The sign is blue bold with red inside that says, Mother Earth needs us to do better. So what is your name?
I'm Linda Bozak.
What brings you to the Women's March today?
Oh, gee, I care about all these different issues, and I think the main one is healthcare, because healthcare's really been kind of attacked, and we have a measure going on right now that we have to vote for by Tuesday, and I'm hoping it passes, but healthcare for everyone. Everyone needs to be covered. Children, adults, seniors, everybody.
Cool. I see you have a sign with you. Would you mind reading that for us?
It says healthcare, not wealthcare. We need to care about people and about their health, and wealth would come after. It's not that wealthy people aren't, they're great, but and they help run our country, but we don't need to just keep giving everything. They need to be helping out too. So we need to fight for the good of all the people.
This is Iris with
Dennis Triglia.
This is Maria Sedith.
Okay. What are you here marching for today?
I'm here marching for equal rights in general for everyone, and to avoid offshore oil drilling in Oregon.
What day of the hour, week, or month is it? I could think of 1,000 things I'm marching for. I had a hard time narrowing it down, but I narrowed it down to liberty and justice for all, because I feel like we've marginalized so many different groups in our country right now, and their voices need to be heard. And we need to march for them because we can, and that's why I'm marching.
So do you have a sign today?
I don't have a sign because I generally try to walk around and interact with other people. Yes. I'll probably march behind some LGBT people if there are any walking in the parade.
Yeah. Do you have a sign today? What does it say?
It says, marching for one individual nation who believes in liberty and justice for all.
Beautiful.
Thank you
guys so much for talking with me.
You're welcome.
Yeah. I regret putting my name in that drawer.
And what you're hearing is the Brookings Harbor Women's March attendees, some of them, cheering and chanting, lock him up, after watching a video of mock-ups of certain members of the Trump administration and the campaign, their faces edited into a video as they're being carried away by police and FBI.
This is Jeremy Pettiner here for you again, and I am reading some of the signs that are just kind of sitting up on the wall that will be used for the Women's March. I'm just going to go along here. One says, Trump care makes us sick, with a guy throwing up. Vets against bigots and racism. Respect must be earned. Pardon me, I'm just reading signs. Are you complicit?
Here.
Oh, here's another one. OMG GOP WTF. May I talk to you, too?
Sure.
So what is your name?
My name is Missy Chagas.
What brings you to the Women's March today?
Because I'm angry about a lot of things that are going on in the administration, a lot of the deregulation, the government shutdown right now, the environment, and equal rights for women and for everybody. And I want to get him out of office. I mean, it's Mueller time for sure.
The phrase Mueller time, I've seen that a few times. What does that mean?
Well, because all the indictments and the special prosecution is getting closer and closer to the White House, and I think it's causing a lot of friction in there, and we just have to be patient for all that to conclude.
So we've seen your sign, the, is this your sign?
Yes.
Oh, I'm sorry.
That's all right.
May I ask what your name is?
Susan.
What brings you to the march today?
I'm here because I'd like to protest some of the environmental concerns that Trump has raised, and he's, I just feel like he's wrecking our country, really. And I just want to make sure that the drilling doesn't happen in the Pacific and that we get our land back in Utah, things like that.
Right. I see you brought a sign with you. Would you mind reading that for us?
It It says, OMG, GOP, what the f***?
What does that mean to you?
Oh my God, the grand old party, what the f*** are they doing to our country is what it means to me. And I just don't like what's happening lately, and I'm excited to be able to protest that.
Bruin News watches as the marchers begin to exit the Redwood Theater, gathering up just outside, preparing for their walk down Chetco Avenue. At the moment, they're pretty quiet. Signs are held high. We're already hearing the honks of what we presume to be supporters.
You'll see fingers if it's not.
No, we may see fingers if they aren't. We may hear the shouts of people who support the march. We may hear shouts of other words.
What is your name?
My name is Jamie Holmes.
What brings you to the march today?
Well, I come to the march today to protest Trump and for women to have rights and just for the world to have rights, you know?
I see you have a sign with you. Would you mind reading that for us?
Yes. The back side says, "The future is female." And the front side says, "If man deserves woman, then woman deserves all."
What does that mean to you?
It means to me that women deserve all that man can have. And there should be no limits.
Okay.
Not hate.
What is your name?
Leah Pruden.
What brings you to the march today?
Women's rights.
I see you have a sign here. What does that say?
Hear me roar.
America great.
What does that mean to you?
It means women are the same as men.
What is your name?
Crystal Gregory.
What brings you to the march today?
Makes America great.
Well, I believe in rights for everybody.
Well, I see you have a couple of signs here. Would you mind reading those for us?
Well, mine says girl power. I kept it simple.
And
my daughter wrote, "Go, go, go Bruins. Go, go superheroes."
What do those mean to you?
Well, mine means to me, it means girls are strong. And my daughter is her own person, and she gets to make her poster whatever she wants it to be, because she is a strong, fierce girl.
I am here walking, and I have bumped into...
Marcia Thibodeau.
Marcia, what brings you to the march today?
I have two daughters, and I have a granddaughter, and I want to stand up so that they have equal opportunities. I was never paid fairly, and I felt like there was so much discrimination being a woman that now I want that to change for all people.
I see you have a sign with you. Would you mind reading that for us?
Trump care nightmare.
What does that mean to you?
Basically, it means that the disenfranchised people, the people who have disabilities, the people who are in poverty, are not going to be taken care of. And they've helped make the society that we have, and they need to be connected with all of us.
I am Jerry Pettiner, and I was just walking along the street with the Women's March, and I bumped into...
Dallin.
Dallin, what brings you here today?
Well, I believe that all lives matter, especially those that can't speak for themselves, like the unborn babies. I am pro-life, I'm against abortion, and I believe that all lives matter. And so I'm holding a sign that says, "Jesus loves you," on one side, and the other side says, "All lives matter," and then John 3:16-17. That's from the Bible. And so I'm also supporting our freedom to protest peacefully. I might be the only one on this side of the street, but that's okay. I'm prior military, so I believe in a strong defense. So I'm also a born-again Christian, and so that's why I've got Jesus Loves You. But I don't think that just saying Black Lives Matter is the full statement, because all lives matter, right?
Mm-hmm.
All lives, especially those that can't speak for themselves or can't walk for themselves. And so that's why I'm out here. It's a beautiful day God has blessed us with. There's a lot of support on the Women's March, but that's okay. I don't care if I'm the only one, you know. I'm sticking to my convictions, my beliefs, and...
I am here across the street from the Women's March, and I have bumped into...
I'm Lori Stoddard.
Lori, what brings you to the march today?
I'm one of the organizers.
Oh. What do you think of the turnout for today?
A little disappointed, honestly. I mean, stoked that we got so many people, but we had some issues with the pilot not publishing some of the things that we'd asked them to publish to pre-promote the march. We sent in press releases, we did some personal outreach, and we didn't get any publicity before the march. We actually had sent things in starting on Saturday, last Saturday, this Wednesday. We got great coverage today, and I think that helped our turnout. But we've been relying on social media and basically personal outreach to get people here. But we're excited. We last year, we had folks from Port Orford and from Crescent City. This year, they did their own marches. So we're really happy with what we've got.
Cool. Why do you think the pilot has failed to do the things you wanted them to do?
Well, the pilot's not my slave, right? They don't have to do what I want them to do. And frankly, they're short-staffed. So I think they do the best they can with what they've got. But we're a little disappointed that we didn't get free publicity.
I see you're wearing a shirt that I don't think you would probably see on the street very often. Would you mind reading that for us?
My shirt says, "Against Trump, you can't grab this."
What does that mean to you?
It means that we've got a vulgar... I'm sorry. It means that we have a vulgarian in the White House who doesn't respect anything except greed and cash. And I think he needs to keep his tiny hands off of my private parts.
You've just heard Bruin Radio, a student-focused program brought to you by the students and staff of the Brookings Harbor High School in partnership with Curry Coast Community Radio, KCIW. Content for this program is provided by the Brookings Harbor High School. To view the credits for this episode, visit kciw.org/credits.